Welcome to the show. Today we have an amazing guest for you. We have Stephen L. Sears. Oh my gosh, you're gonna love him. Stephen is a writer, author, screenwriter, producer, whose work has spanned several decades in television, film, animation, digital media, and gameplay. And he's known for so many things, from the A-Team to Xena to Texas Walker Ranger. Oh my God. Let's welcome Stephen to the show, and he's going to tell us all about his amazing stuff that he's been working on and what he's up to. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi there. How are you doing?
Yeah, and thanks everyone for tuning in. Take a second to subscribe and like the podcast and download it. And so, Steve, where are we recording with you today?
I'm sorry, where am I?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in my home office, as I am fortunate to have been for quite a while. Coming out of Los Angeles, technically Glendale, California. Been living in Los Angeles since, I moved out here in 1980. And got involved in my career at that time. Originally, I came out as an actor, and then I ended up kind of backing into the writing side of it. And yeah, it's kept me busy.
Oh, wow. So where did you grow up?
Well, you've made a heck of an assumption that I actually have grown up. My background is, I'm a military brat. So every 3 years, my family would move different places around the country or around the world. I was born in Georgia, and then we moved to Florida, and then from there to Germany, then to Washington State, then back to Florida, then to Kentucky, and then my dad retired to a small town, St. Augustine, Florida. And that was, I entered high school at that particular time. So, you know, a shout out to my St. Augustine High School peeps out there. After that, I went to the University of Florida. I got my associate arts. I went to Florida State University, got a degree in theater and psychology, go figure. And then right after that, graduated college and moved right out to Los Angeles. And here I am.
Well, hey, I'm a Gator too. But so you went to University of Florida, then Florida State?
Yeah, I get to hate myself once a year.
Oh my God, how was that?
I loved both schools. I'm a huge supporter of both schools, although I do favor the Seminoles in the football season. I want the Gators to win a perfect 11-1 season every year. But I love both schools, and it was a heck of an education. A lot of the stuff that made my success today came out of those two schools.
Wow. So when you were growing up and moving around, like my dad was in the military too, and we moved around. I was born in Italy and went to the South as well, like Louisiana, Tennessee, Florida. So like, did you have some favorite films? Did you all watch? Do you remember those favorite films of yours? Do you have any favorites?
I've kind of thought back on that several times. Favorite films. Well, first of all, I want to say it's hard for me to respond to favorite questions. I'm not usually not somebody wired to do the prioritization. It's kind of like asking somebody who their favorite kids are. It's the kids you don't hate at the moment. So a lot of the influences I had were mostly in the fantasy and sci-fi arena. A lot of movies, especially science fiction and old movies like the Ray Harryhausen stop motion films, Jason and the Argonauts and those kinds of things. They influenced me quite a bit because of the fantasy aspect of it. You were not constrained by even the normal laws of physics. And so my mind tends to work in an imaginary realm ever since I was a child. I was always imagining worlds that didn't exist and characters that had never been born and kind of playing them out in my head. I didn't know how crucial that was going to become in my future, but that was pretty much what I was drawn to. The idea of these strange and exotic worlds where the imagination could run free. So, you know, I was a huge fan of the original classic Star Trek. Even Lost in Space, I tended to favor Star Trek over Lost in Space.
Nice.
But it was kind of like that. Now, at the same time, I was also attracted to movies and television shows that were heavy with character. I've always been fascinated with the way the mind works and how people interact with each other. And in fact, I mentioned that I had a degree in psychology. Actually, it was a minor degree that I got from Florida State, and I didn't know I had it. When I went to get my diploma, the person who was in charge of the desk asked me what my major was, because I had to fill out the paperwork, and I said, theater, medectol. And then she said, well, what was your minor? And I went, I don't know. And she said, you didn't declare a minor? I went, no, I didn't declare a minor. And she said, well, let's take a look at what's your elective credits. Which classes did you take for the fun of it? And almost all of them were sociology, psychology, anthropology, those types of studies. And I realized that was the connectivity to a lot of the film and television that I also enjoyed, which was all character-based.
Nice. And then, so you graduate, and then, so how do you come, what's your journey to LA? You just moved out here afterwards?
Yeah, I was, oh my gosh. I went to the University of Florida as a pre-med student. Yes, I was going to be a doctor. That should scare everybody. but my dad, even though my dad was a frontline soldier, he had taken his last 6 months orientation out of the military in hospital administration. And so he became the administrator of a medical organization, and that organization also had a hospital. So I spent a lot of time around the hospital, and I enjoyed science as well. So when I went to the University of Florida, originally I was going to be pre-med. That was until Chemistry 101 knocked me into liberal arts. Can't go pre-med if you've got a C in chemistry, which is what I got. So liberal arts, as most people know, is Latin for I have no idea. And I kind of stayed there figuring out what I wanted to do. And believe it or not, this is the short version. Sorry, folks. There was a movie that had come out called The Goodbye Girl. Now, that starred Richard Dreyfuss. And I've been acting on stage since I was 12 years old. I mean, just regional theater, school stuff, the state play of Florida, Cross and Sword, I was in that. And I always enjoyed it. It was a hobby. So people had seen this movie and they said, oh, you should see the movie. He's playing you, which I thought was interesting. They didn't say he's playing a role you could play. They said he's playing you. So I went and saw it, and I saw some similarities there. And certainly the actor in me was like, well, of course, I could have played that role. So later on, Richard Dreyfuss won the Academy Award for playing me. And I was heading toward the Rights Union. You know the Rights Union, for everybody else out there. That was a student union at the University of Florida. And I'm walking toward it and thinking about the fact that he had won this Academy Award. And what went through my head was, I thought, well, of course he would win that, but only special people win that. And I literally just stopped in my right where I was, and I slapped myself mentally, and I said, oh my God, if he had felt that way, he never would have gotten close to it. And at that moment, I thought, you know what? I want to get a degree in theater. I want to be an actor. That's what I want to do. That's what I love to do. So I decided to transfer to Florida State, which had one of the top theater schools in the country, and try to seek my degree there. Now, I had to tell my dad that I was not going to be a doctor. I was going to be an actor. But I was extremely blessed. I had incredibly wonderful parents. Both my mom and dad were extremely supportive. And when I called my dad and told him that I was going to transfer, I was going to be a doctor, I was going to be an actor, his immediate response was, you've always been happy doing it, go do it. And so that started everything. That was the first domino that started everything toward my career. So I went to Florida State, I got my degree in theater, wonderful experience, graduated there, then came out here, and then the real world began.
So did you have an agent out here? Were you acting, or did you get a PA job, or what kind of?
When I first got here, I always tell it this way. I got an entry level position in the industry, meaning I worked at a restaurant. actually, the first job I had was working at an answering service, which had a lot of celebrities on it. So that was kind of cool. But I followed that up very quickly, like within just a few months, I was working at a restaurant at Universal Studios called Womp Hoppers. And it was a theme studio at the entrance to the tour. So anybody could go to this theater. or to this restaurant. And a lot of the people there were all actors and singers and, you know, everybody creative. And this restaurant was geared toward that. It was meant for the tourists. So we were encouraged to just have fun and, you know, do jokes, sing anytime. And we were just having a lot of fun. So I was pursuing my acting at the same time. And I had a few agents in that process. I got to know some of the casting directors, however. And with talking to the casting directors, for whatever reason, and I think I like to think it's just my particular personality, they kind of dropped their guard around me. You know, anybody in this business knows there are so many people trying to break in that if you're in a position, you put up walls. You know, you're polite about it, but basically we know everybody wants something out of you. So the relationship I ended up with these casting directors was very congenial. And we would chat every now and then. If they saw me walking by the office, they'd call me in and we just talk. And one thing they told me, they all had in common, it was they said they were tired of seeing actors do established material. They do the same scenes over and over and over again. They could like mouth Neil Simon along with them. So I very naively thought, oh, well, maybe they want to see original stuff. So I started writing audition scenes just for myself, little 3-page scenes to be done in cold auditions and at performer showcases. So one night, I was doing a performer showcase, and there were 7 different scenes being done. I believe it was 7. And I didn't know what the other scenes were. I know that it was just going to be me and my partner performing a scene I had written. And for those who don't know, a performer's showcase is basically a bunch of people rent a space. You all put on a scene one evening, and everybody invites everybody they know in the industry, hoping that agents and producers will show up and see you. So when I got there and looked at the playbill, I realized that 5 of the scenes were written by me. People had gotten copies of scenes I had written, and so they were doing them. And afterwards, this one casting director I was talking to, she asked me if I was the same person who wrote those scenes, and I said I was. And she said, you should seriously think about writing. And I completely dismissed it. I said, I know, that's a lot of typing, and I don't, I'm an actor. Yeah. I kind of thought about it. And so I started researching it. I pulled out a script that I had acquired from some sitcom, and I read it, and I thought, oh, well, I'll try to write one of these. And I did try to write, the first one was accredited as the worst script that's ever been written in the history of mankind. I can validate that. But I loved it. I loved doing it. The process was so incredible. So I just wanted to do it again for the fun of it. Now, back to the restaurant. At the restaurant, I met a guy named Bert Pearl, and Bert and I became best friends, and we just hung out together. We did all sorts of things together. We told stories together, and he was also kind of like, oh, this writing thing, that's kind of cool. So he and I started writing just for the fun of it. That was it. We would get scripts. We would break them down, figure out why they worked, and we would write our own scripts, and it really was for the fun of it. I would also call some of the production offices trying to get writer's guides. Some productions have writer's guides, some don't, Bibles, if you want to call them that. And I would ask, and you know, many of them would just say no, or they just say, we don't give them out. Sometimes they would send them. So again, this was just curiosity at work. We were just fascinated. So we saw this show that had just come on the air back in 1983, yes, 83, called, I know, way back then, Ancient Times, I'm an old version. Well, this show was called Riptide, and it was a Stephen J. Cannell production. And Riptide was about 3 guys who lived on a boat, and they were detectives, 2 hunky guys and 1 computer geek. And it was hugely popular. It just come out. And so Bert and I decided we wanted to try to write one of those. Again, just for the fun of it. We had no intention of doing anything. So I called over to the production office, and I got this woman on the phone, and I asked her if they had one. And she said, no, we don't have one, but have you seen the show? And I said, oh, yeah, I saw the show. I love it. And then we got into this conversation that really had little to do with the business. Are you new out here? Yes, I'm from Florida. Oh, I have friends in Florida. It was that kind of a conversation, just completely friendly. So at the end of that conversation, she had to go, and she said, well, if you have an agent and if you've written any scripts, send them over because the producers are always looking. I went, great. Now, I did not get her name. She didn't get my name. So I hung up, called this guy I'd met who was an agent, told him that story, and he said, sure, I'll send some scripts over. So Bert and I sent him a couple of our scripts. He sent them over. About a month and a half later, we got a call from the producer, one of the producers of Riptide, asking us to come in and meet him and the executive producer. Now, Bert and I had no idea what was going on. We're kind of like, wow, cool. You know, this is a chance to learn more about the business. So we took the meeting and we met Tom Blomquist, the producer, and Babs Grahowski, who was the executive producer. And we just had a fantastic time with them. They asked if we had any ideas. We had five ideas because we were going to write a script anyway. Two of them they kind of dismissed. Three of them they said were interesting. And they said, go think about those and we'll have another meeting. So Bert and I went off. We kind of developed two of the stories. One of them we couldn't crack, but we came up with a different idea for an approach. And we went back into them, gave them the two stories and then new one. And they liked the new one. They said, oh, write up a story for the new one. Cool. Now, seriously, we actually thought they were on hiatus. And we'd gotten along so well that they just enjoyed being with us. We didn't know what was going on. So the next time we came back with a story beaten out, we watched the two of them rip it apart and put it back together again. And that was not a disappointing thing. That was the most fascinating thing to see these incredibly talented people with their passion taking what we had created and turning it into something that was really functional, something that could work. So when they were done with that meeting, Tom turned to me and he said, I need the name of your agent for business affairs. And that was when it hit me. And I said, did we get an assignment? And he said, well, you got the assignment 2 weeks ago. Now, Bert and I were shocked because we never intended to do this. Suddenly, we were backing into this industry. Now, we wrote the first draft of that script. And didn't even know how much the script paid. We thought it would be like $500 for the script. It was $15,000 at the time. We didn't know that.
Nice.
So we wrote the first draft, and off of the first draft, they hired us on staff to be regular writers. And that was it. And both of us, our career started at that point and hasn't ended yet.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. So it's nice when you're like, okay, we're just going with the flow. Sure, you want this? Okay, let's work on this and come back. And like this happy go lucky, like maybe a little naive. Like, I think it took some of the pressure off, right?
It did. There's, you should be as knowledgeable as you can be about this business, but I have to admit, a little naivete helps. For one thing, I made that phone call about the writer's guide. One of the things you were told, and you're still told this today, is don't waste your time calling an office. They'll just hang up on you or they'll just tell you no. Well, I kind of ignored that. First of all, if they hung up on me, they'll never know who I am. Who cares? If they say no, then they probably won't remember who I was and that won't matter either. But if you get that yes or somebody willing to talk to you, as which happened with me, you never know where that's going to go. But I think one of the keys for Bert and I is that this is the real naive thing. We were just following the flashy light. We were like, this is fun. Why not do this? We're still, when we actually got the meetings, I had left the restaurant and I was literally putting ads in the front of shopping carts at that time for like $130 a month. I saved some money up from the restaurant. But we were doing it just for the fun. So we did not have the pressure of people who push at the door. And I'm incredibly lucky for that. I do not dismiss and underestimate the struggle that other people have gone through to try to break into the business. Now, I don't want to make it sound like it was just completely luck. We did have the gumption to make the phone calls. We wrote the scripts. We had the material. And when we showed up and we talked to the people who made the difference, we were not arrogant. We were not idiots. We got along with them. We were good in the room. We enjoyed their presence. They enjoyed us. And as I ended up producing shows later on in my life, I realized how important that is, the teamwork aspect. You don't have to necessarily like somebody, but you have to be able to work with them and trust them. You have to be able to throw the most ridiculous things out on the table and know that they will be accepted and explored on an even basis. And so we did all of that as a natural part of us. And we continued it through our careers. Unfortunately, Bert passed away. And he was, after we had worked at Cannell for several years together. And then it was suggested by Frank Lupo and Babs Grayhowski. Frank was one of the co-creators along with Steve on the A-Team and Riptide and other shows. That Bert and I separated our contracts, which meant twice as much material for them and twice as much money for each one of us. But even by doing that, we worked on a few more shows together. Then Bert went off on his own amazing career. He was an exec producer on Touched by an Angel, for example. So he was an incredible person, incredible talent, and I still miss him to this day.
Oh, that's so sad. But at least you had that beautiful, amazing friendship. And you all met each other in the restaurant, right?
Yeah. I still have a lot of friends from that restaurant. It's no longer there. It's gone. But a lot of creative people came out of there. And every now and then we'll get together and have a little reunion just for the fun of it. But yeah, you don't take those things for granted. You know, it's hard to look back and quantify exactly the benefits you get from those friendships and from those relationships, but they are tangible and actually much more necessary as you get older.
Yeah. Do you have any fond memories of, like, say, Riptide, A-Team, Stingray, Waukesha Texas Ranger, Jesse Hawk, Superboy, She Spies, a Swamp Thing for USA, Raven for CBS, Xena, Warrior, Princess for MC Universal, Sheena for Columbia, TriStar. Oh my God. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. Do you have any fun stories that you want to share?
No.
Okay.
It's kind of like, okay, I'll start now and 38 years later we'll be done. There's always, you know, fun stories about it. There's the A-Team was such an interesting series. It was, you know, top of the line show when it first came out, critically reviewed, and it was basically a cartoon, you know, and it was very new at the time. The characters, the actors especially, were just so unique in the way they related with each other, with the way they work with George and Dwight and T and Dirk, and the other people who were involved, Linda as well. But the A-Team, for example, went through one of those periods of it was extremely popular. Then about the third season, it became kind of people were dismissing it because of the, you know, repetitive action and the violence. Let's just be upfront and honest about that. And then it went through about 10 years where nobody talked about it. And then it became like this cult phenomena where people loved it again because it was their childhood memory. And I remember going to a meeting at NBC, I believe it was. I was meeting with an executive on another project. I'd never met this person before. And so I was escorted into his office, and it was a younger guy, real nice. And, you know, he greeted me, "Hello there, Mr. Sears, please come on in." I walked in, he shut the door. Then he turns around to me with this really excited, geeky look on his face. And he goes, "This is why I got into the business." And I went, "Okay, why?" And he said, "So I could meet people like you. I mean, you wrote the A-Team. I used to run home from school to watch it." Now, it was an interesting change of opinion, but also what stood out for me was that he ran home from school to watch it, which not only means that he was a child when it was on, it means it was already in syndication. So at that moment, I felt very old. However, very accomplished.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, my mom liked that show. I remember that show. Mr. T, George Peppard, all those guys. Really fun. Really, really fun show. Like fun. But, you know, like you said, action, violence. I guess that's the staple, right? Mainly. There's a lot of that.
But yeah, that was the 1980s. That was a lot of the 1980s. But I'll tell you that also working at the Cannell Company, Stephen J. Cannell's company, was, Bert and I didn't realize any of this. That was the company. That was the boutique production company at the time. I mean, they had four shows in the top 10 back when there were only three channels. That was it. So we backed into this elite production company. And yet when we got there, the way Steve was running it wasn't like an elite production company. It was like a family. I could walk down the hall and just, you know, walk into Steve's office. Hi, how are you doing? That kind of stuff. All the producers, we all knew each other. The amazing amount of talent that went through the hallways. I remember one time we had a new show coming up, and I was just walking down the hallway, and one of the producers comes up, and he says, by the way, hey, Steve, I want you to meet the new guy on the block. He's one of the stars of our new show. And I said, hi, how are you? And that was about it. That was, we shook hands, moved on. That was Johnny Depp. Now,
Wow, you met Johnny Depp? Was that for 21 Jump Street?
I met him, but again, it's 21 Jump Street.
Oh, wow.
But again, it was just literally, hi, how are you? You're the new guy on the block. Good luck, which apparently, you know, has blossomed for him. So it was kind of interactions like that. It was, and it was a very friendly atmosphere. I mean, to this day, I mentioned Tom Blomquist and Babs Grzegowski. They're still like among my best friends. Just actually had a birthday for Babs recently, took her out to dinner. So I've maintained those relationships because they were real. We became friends. But the Candle Company was kind of like that. And then other shows that I've done, many of them have been just freelance. Other ones I've worked on staff with Swamp Thing. That was exec produced by Tom Blomquist back from Riptide. And that was a show that the budget had been cut on, cut back tremendously, which required myself, Tom, and the other producer, Jeff Miro, along with Boris Malden, who was a producer on it, to really become creative in telling the show. And it went from being this action-y superhero show to being this somewhat thought-provoking show, because we couldn't afford the action, for one thing. And that went for 3 seasons. We were on the last 2 seasons of that. And of course, Xena Warrior Princess, which was an incredible show. That experience was just absolutely, I want to say absolutely wonderful, keeping in mind that every show, including the A-Team, Riptide, all the other ones, it's like a dysfunctional family. You always have disagreements, but you work toward the common goal of putting on a good show. And I still have many friends from that show as well. In fact, Renee O'Connor, who played Gabrielle on the show, she and I remained good friends, and she became an independent producer and also a producer and director of Shakespearean works, which, interestingly enough, I was just in one of her productions as Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh,
so I went
wow.
back to my acting roots.
That's amazing. Wow. This is just incredible. And we have so much more to get to. We have like your novels and what you're working on now, because you just have like this big news that I hope you want to share with the audience. So let's everyone come on back for part 2 with Stephen L. Sears, because we have so much more to cover, all his shows and then what he's working on now and his novels that he wrote and all these new things. Is that cool, Stephen? You're gonna come back for part 2?
I would love it. Let's do this.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone, and come back for part 2. We'll be right back.